Welcome to another edition of our Thursday night class. We are studying Parashat Toledot. Torah is not a storybook. The Zohar HaKadosh in Parashat Be'alotecha is very critical of those that think the Torah is just telling you over stories and anecdotes and episodes of the Tzaddikim. The Zohar HaKadosh actually levels a very severe, I guess there's no way to say it, a curse to those that relegate the Torah just to mere stories, and they don't believe that there's things that are underlying in these stories, and there's things that we can learn from it. Torah, the word Torah means instruction, coming from the word moreh. That means every pasuk in the Torah has to be a lesson to us. It has to teach us something. It has to be a guide in some way or form. In this week's parasha, we have a great challenge to try to unravel seemingly what we would consider very inconsequential. But the Torah spends a lot of ink and a lot of pisukim talking about Yitzhak Avinu and the wells. He's digging wells. Now, we don't question if he dug the wells or not. We don't doubt the Torah's veracity. He dug wells. But we can't understand why the Torah would feel that that's an important piece of information that it has to tell over to us. I mean, Yitzhak Avinu clearly was Kodesh Kodashim. He had a status of a Korban. He wasn't allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. He is the Korban of the Akedah. His Zechut is still meriting us till today. But the Torah has no problem telling us that he's digging wells. Clearly he didn't work for the water department. And Avdil, he wasn't a plumber. And it doesn't seem that he needed all this water. As we're going to see, he digs a lot of wells. You want to dig one or two wells for your family. But the Torah goes out of its way to tell us in great detail. I struggled with this episode many years, trying to, you know, get something out of it. Well, I'll read the text a little, just to get a flavor. The Torah tells us, V'chol ha-be'erot asher hafru avdei aviv, b'imei Avraham aviv sitemum pelishtim v'imaleum afar. All the wells that Avraham dug, so the pelishtim stopped them up, and they filled them with dirt. So what did Yitzchak do? Yitzchak Avinu came along, ויחפור את בארות המים אשר חפרו בימי אברהם, ויקרא להם שמות, and he calls them names, כשמות אשר קרא להם אביב. It seems in those days they used to call wells names. Okay, so Avraham Avinu named them, and Yitzchak Avinu would call them by the same names that his father had called them already. So that doesn't tell us the names, but it seems the names were known. It doesn't tell us how many wells there were. The Mefarshim say that, well, it says, Vechol ha-be'erot. Well, be'erot's got to be two, minimum, and Vechol is three. So they say Avraham Avinu dug three wells, and Yitzhak Avinu unclogged them after Pidishtim stopped them up. And then the Pasuk comes along and says, ויחפרו עבדי יצחק בנחל. Okay, the servants of Yitzhak get to the Nahal. I guess that's a river. וימצאו שם באר מים חיים. They find a well of living water. And then, of course, there's a fight. ויריבו רועי גרר עם רועי יצחק לאמור, לנו המים. Fight breaks out, who the water belongs to. Yeah, in the olden days, how did I learn it? Water was a commodity. So you fight over it. So Yitzhak Avinu calls the Be'er. Vayikra shema ver esek. Esek means like a quarrel. Or it was like a tumult. There's a dispute. So he called it dispute. That's the name of the well. Not the most, warm name for a well. Then again, we don't name wells. I mean, if I went to your house And I see you have a water cooler, and I say, what's the water cooler's name? He said, what's the water? It doesn't have a name. What's your dog's name? Or the dog has a name. You know, the dog's Waldo, but the water cooler doesn't have a name. Here they named him. So they tries to tell us the name. And I say, who cares? This is a book that's teaching me a lesson. Oh, I called it Esek. Now you can sleep tonight. So he digs another well. And of course, then they fight again, deja vu all over again. This time, it seems it was a deeper argument. So he calls the second well animosity. Sitna is hatred. So he moves to the next place. He digs yet the third well. Good news, Rabotai velo rabu aleha. They didn't fight over the third well. So he calls the third well expansion. And he says, Ki atar hiv Hashem lanu farinu ba'aris. We have finally expanded ourselves, our position, and we are flourishing in the land. Okay. It's not done. Now, there's one more episode. It says that Abimelech comes along and makes a peace treaty with Yitzhak, similar to what Abraham did. And they have a whole ceremony. They eat and drink, of course the Goyim have to drink something, and then they make a Shavuah. Vayashkimu baboker, vayishavu ish le'achiv, and they swear to each other they can have peace. Vayhi bayom ahu, vayavo avdei Yitzhak, vayagidu lo alodot ha-be'er asher chafaru. It's hard, we find another be'er. So we found water. So that's number 7. The 3 of Avraham, the 3 of Yitzhak, and then this is the 7th well. So the pasuk will come along and say, "Vayikra ota shiva." That's an appropriate name. He calls the 7th well number 7. Al ken shema'ir be'er sheva. And that's where you get the name of the city. In Israel, till today, it's called Be'er Sheva, because that's where the 7 wells were, and it's an appropriate name. Although, again, if I'm naming the city, I mean, yeah, that's one of the utilities that were in the city, water. But I'm sure there were other things also that were necessities in the city as well. There was a supermarket, there was a bank, there was a post office, there was a saloon. I mean, but he names the city 7 Well City. Again, it sounds very incidental. 7 wells, and you call it Be'er Sheva. Just a side point, just to clear this up before we go further. We have to get a lot of stuff out of the way before we make our journey into this well business. It seems that Yitzhak invents Be'er Sheva. This is his patent. He names the town Be'er Sheva. Although, if you remember, that Avraham did this already. I mean, I'm had a problem with it. I go back to Perech Chaf Aleph, and I see that Avraham Avinu is also dealing with Avimelech, and they need to make a peace treaty. So the Pasuk says, they swear. They make a shavuah, anochi shaveya. That what? You don't touch my children and grandchildren and great grandchildren. I won't touch yours. That's fine. Al ken kara lemakom ahu Be'er Sheva. So Avraham Avinu calls the place Be'er Sheva. Kisham nishvu shenehem, because that's where they made the shavuah. So I'm just wondering. I mean, Yitzhak, with all due respect, your father already named the city in 2 parashiyot ago. So here, big chedush of Yitzhak Avinu, because Ken kara Be'er Sheva. It was called Be'er Sheva. They didn't have to change the signs. They didn't have to change the Chamber of Commerce. Already was called Be'er Sheva already. That was the name of the city that Abraham called it. So what's the big chedush of Yitzhak? So the Hatam Sofer makes a very, very important note here, observation. He says, Avraham did not call it Be'er Sheva. Avraham called it Be'er Sheva. And it was Yitzhak that changed the name from Be'er Sheva to Be'er Sheva. We always thought that was like some grammatical issue there. But the Atam Sofer says, no, that was a different city. Same place, different name. Avraham Avinu wasn't naming it after wells, especially in his time there wasn't seven wells. So he named it after the Shavuah. So after the Shavuah, he called the Be'er Shava. Now Yitzhak Avinu, after he has the seven wells, so he comes along and changes it from Shava to Sheva. The Hatam Sofer notes that from Avraham's time, any time the Torah calls this town, it calls the Be'er Shava. However, after Yitzhak Avinu changes the name, it's always called Be'er Sheva. So clearly there's a difference between Shava and Sheva. That's just a, you know, incidental point in the name of the city. But it doesn't explain to us what's all this energy being expended, and the Torah telling it to us what he did. Why do I care so much about the wells? The Ramban, in one of the famous principles that he always tells us about in Sefer Bereshit, he can't say it enough times. Ma'aseh avot siman lebanim. So he's going to tell us, listen, you have to learn the stories of the avot on two levels. You have to learn it in the microcosm, and then you have to learn it in the macrocosm. The micro is what happened to them, what they did. But you have to always know that their lives and their episodes would plant a seed which would eventually germinate into Jewish history. Their personal lives become our public lives. It's almost as if to say that everything they did would create a dominant gene, and the dominant gene eventually would come out somewhere in the DNA of Klal Yisrael. So it's an amazing thing. Whenever you study Ma'aseh Avot, you always have to say, okay, this is what happened, and then you have to try to draw a line. When did it come out in the children? When did the DNA show the episode in the macro version of it? So he says, this story of the wells is no different. So don't think for a minute that Yitzhak Avinu worked for the sewer department or the water department, the water board. Yitzhak Avinu was involved in the Dvarim She'omdim Berumo Shel Olam. He was involved in very, very deep things. It's got nothing to do with wells, although that's what it seems at surface. But these were tremendous, tremendous yesodot. That would be some of the greatest things that happened in Klal Yisrael. So he says, Ramban, there's three wells. At least three wells that Yitzhak Avinu was involved in. So he says, the first well represents the first Beit HaMikdash. The first Beit HaMikdash, and the Torah refers to it as Be'er Mayim Hayim. Yerushalayim is a city where the Jewish people would come for spiritual life. This is the heartbeat of Jerusalem is in the temple. So when Yitzhak Avinu was digging the first well, it's all the kavanot of the first Beit HaMikdash in that well. And he reaches Be'er Mayim Hayim. The temple is built. But if anybody knows what the Gemara says in Yoma on page 9, the Gemara says that something happened in the times of the first Beit HaMikdash which would eventually be the cause of its destruction. There was a fight that broke out. History now. Shlomo HaMelech is the king. He builds the first Beit HaMikdash. He has a child called Rehavam. At that point, there's one kingdom. It's Malchut Beit David. After that, there's a split in the kingdom. That means the leadership of Klal Yisrael splits into now Malchut Beit David and the Malchei Yisrael. And there's factions now. There's two sides. You know, you have the kings of Israel on one side, the king, and there's friction between them. And now there's a divide in Klal Yisrael. The Gemara says that divide, at least in the times of the first Beit HaMikdash, was limited to the higher echelons, the leaders of the people. They were involved in the struggle of the split of the kings. And eventually, because of that struggle, the temple was destroyed. Yitzhak Avinu predicts that. Or the Torah predicts it, that after he reaches Mayim Hayim, the Torah says, immediately, Vayhi, or Vayarivu, who fights in this first well? Ro'e Gerar im Ro'e Yitzhak. The shepherds. The shepherds are the leaders. The shepherds are the ones that lead the people. In the first Beit HaMikdash, the machloket was between the Ro'im. And Yitzhak Avinu says, well, that we're going to call it Esek. Esek, it's a dispute, but it's a dispute that you understand it. You understand why they're fighting. You understand, you know, it's about power. You understand why each side is what they're saying. It's not good to have a dispute, but you understand. Esek means it's a give and take, but you understand it at least. So he says, okay, but nonetheless it was destroyed. Well, continue the thought of the Ramban, Be'er Acheret then would be the second Beit HaMikdash. So Yitzhak Avinu now is laying the foundations of Bayit Sheni. Now Bayit Sheni, the same Gemara on Daf Tet says, there already the Mahloket that was on the higher tier trickled down to the people. It's always like that. You know, the Mahloket starts with the rabbis and then it moves to the students. And once it moves to the students, then it becomes a full-blown war. You know, Hillel and Shammai only argued 3 times in the Mishnah. You can count the arguments on their finger. I mean, that was with the rabbis, Hillel and Shammai. Everybody thinks, oh, Hillel and Shammai only argued 3 times. Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel, they argue on every page. That's what happens. You know, the rabbis have a little dispute, but the students, you know, they take it to a different level. So that's what happened here in the Beit HaMikdash. Initially, it was Ro'eh Gerar. It was Ro'eh Yitzchak. But the second temple, it says, Vayarivu. Now it's nothing to do with Ro'eh. Now everybody was fighting. Vayarivu. Yitzchak Avinu sees that this is a different argument. He calls it Sitna. Sitna is an argument that's inexplicable. That's Sitna. It's just out of which we would call baseless hatred, which is the cause of the second Chorban, Beit HaMikdash. So the Siddat Kingdom already, the Maaseh Avot is in this episode. And, if I may add, the Chiddah says this, second Beit HaMikdash would be destroyed by the Romans, Titus. That's the grandchildren of Esav. Every nation has a guardian angel. The guardian angel of Esav in Rome is the Satan himself. Is the Malach HaMavet. Satan himself is the angel of Esav. Samech Mem, as they call him. So the Pasuk says, Vayikra Shema Sitna, says the Chiddah. The first 3 letters, Sitna, is Satan. Because the Satan himself would send his diplomats on earth to come along and destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Well, Pasuk then says, Vayatek Misham, he moves a little away. Vayahpor Be'er Acheret, he builds another Be'er, he digs another Be'er. Good news, Velo Ravu Aleha. That's referring to the third Beit HaMikdash. The third Beit HaMikdash, Lo Ravu Aleha. It's going to be a time of peace. Oseh Shalom Emromav. Vayikra Shema Rechovot, he's going to call it, or he calls it expansion. Vayomer, and he says, Ki Atay Rechiv Adonai Lanu Farinu Ba'aretz. He comes along and says, look, now there's going to be a time of expansion, exactly what the Gemara says. That when Mashiach comes, they build the third temple, all the exilees are going to come to Israel. How is this land going to fit everybody? The Gemara says, Israel is like an elastic band. It stretches. You know, it's like the skin of a deer. It just you put it on the deer and it's able to stretch and fit it. You take it off the deer and it constricts. So the Pasuk comes along and says, well, when we build the third Beit HaMikdash, Rechovot, you know, the land is going to start to expand. Vayomer, he says, Ki atay erchiv Hashem lanu. God is going to expand the land, Ufarinu ba'aretz, and we'll multiply the land. So therefore, this is of tremendous insight. We read it as if he's digging wells. And the Ramban says, put that on the side, you're not digging wells. He's building Batei Mikdash. That means if Shlomo is able to build the Beit HaMikdash Rishon, it's only because Yitzhak Avinu was doing something in that well. I don't know the Kavanot, I don't know the intent and all the different tefillot that he made, but that was the DNA of Bayit Rishon, and the DNA of Bayit Sheni is in the second well, and the DNA La'atid Avo of the third Beit HaMikdash is in that third well. Good news is, is that if anybody was skeptical about the third Beit HaMikdash, you don't got to be skeptical anymore. Because whatever he said about the first two wells happened. I mean, to the T. So therefore, he was right about the first two Beit HaMikdash, so therefore, you can rest assured that the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be right on as well. Some observations of my own, if I may. I noticed in the first well it says Vayahpiru. That's plural. I said it made sense. The first Beit HaMikdash was built by Shlomo, and I think he had 60,000 workers that built the Beit HaMikdash. So it's Vayahpiru. The second Be'er, it says Vayahpiru again. That's plural. Well, the second Beit HaMikdash was built by Herod, and he had thousands of workers. The third well, the Pasuk says Vayahpor. Vayahpor is singular. And we know the tradition that the third Beit HaMikdash is not going to have really too much intervention in it. It's going to come down already prefabricated. It's going to be built by God in heaven. Like we say in the Tefillah, Har'enu bebinyano. Just show us the binyan. The binyan is going to be made by God. So the Pasuk says Vayahpor. Furthermore, in the third well, it's the only time where Yitzhak Avinu mentions God's name. It is there that he says, because the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be built by God himself. So it's all there. Now those are just some quick observations. I also made a point that the Ramban doesn't mention, but obviously we can question that answers three of the wells, Hakam. What about the seven? There were seven wells. But once the Ramban put us on this Mahalach, we understand it very well. If I'm not mistaken, the Hatam Sofer says. Hatam Sofer counts that there were seven temples. Some of them served as in a temple in the Beit HaMikdash, and some of them were transient. Some of them were tabernacles. Seven of them. You have the Ohel Moed in the desert, which eventually would become the same Ohel Moed in Gilgal, when the Jewish people come into Eretz Yisrael. So that's one. You also have a Shiloh. That's where Hannah prays for Shemuel. You have Nov, which is Eir HaKohanim. You have Giv'on, where the Mishkan was there as well. And then you have Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni, and then you have the third Beit HaMikdash. So actually the seven wells represent all seven locations where the Shekhinah would rest. If that's the case, it also answers my original question, why would he name the city after the seven wells? Because that is the most significant part of the city. That's not just an incidental. He's not naming it after seven water tanks. He's naming it after seven places that the Shekhinah is going to rest over the time of Jewish history. Now that is that's something to name a city after. To the extent where he changes the name from Be'er Sheva and he upgrades it to Be'er Sheva to commemorate or to remind us of the seven Mekomot HaKidoshim, where the Shekhinah would rest over the time of history. That's the Ramban. So it got me excited, because now already we have we know that something's deep, but until you see it, now you're convinced. Okay, now you know there's something over here. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is amazing, as I always tell you, when it comes to this shiur. It's because the Si'ata Dishmaya, the divine assistance in this shiur. I see it on a weekly basis. The way the shiur always works is, it's usually Sunday I scan the parasha and I zone in on the topic that I'm going to pick. That takes me a day in itself. What are you going to talk about this week? Boom. So on Sunday already I said, I'm talking about the wells. Alright, Monday, the Ramban comes to me, which is easy to find. You don't got to be a genius to find the Ramban. That's the main piece on the Be'er, is the Ramban. And then you start to look over here, you find the chidah, there's a hatam sofer over here. You know, you pick up a little tidbit over here on the way. But you're waiting for the, you know, you're waiting for the petek to come from the heaven to land on your desk. And, you know, the shiur is Thursday night, so it's got to land before Thursday night. This morning in the shiur, some of our members that were in the synagogue saw one of our Friday members come to the synagogue. And he says, Kvod Arav, I know you're about to give a shiur. I'd like to present you with a new book. He presents me with the book called Devre Shelomo. That was written by the early Babov Rebbe of Shlomo Halberstam, Abedin Kodesh Babov. The book just came out, the Chodesh Mar Cheshvan, Shnat Tafshin Ayin Chet. So the ink is still wet on the book. He said, "I know you like that dynasty and you like their ideas. So I figured I'd come and deliver you the book." I said, "Okay, now I know it already." I said, "This is from God. I don't know what's in the book, but if the guy's coming to deliver it to me on Thursday, he's got to talk about the wells in the book. He's got to talk about the wells because this is the petek." Now I have to say the petek came a little late this week. But nonetheless it comes, so I had to scramble immediately to put this in order. So I look right away. As he's standing in front of me, I said, "Where's the book on?" He says, "What are you looking for? It's a new book. You don't know what I know what I'm looking for. I know what I'm looking for." He must be talking about the wells. Sure enough, there's the piece. He gave this talk, and they even give you the history when he gave the talk. Devre Torah alalu ne'emru b'Seudat Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Okay, gave it at a Seudat Rosh Chodesh. Hu yom huledet Maran Admor. It was his birthday. Kishmal'u lo pechet shana. So it was his 88th birthday. This was the present that the Rebbe gave the congregation. Usually it should be the opposite. The congregation should get the Rebbe a present, but he gave them this gift over here. So I'll do the same thing. I didn't get any presents from the congregation either. My birthday was last week, as you know. So no problem. No, I don't hold it against anybody. But I'll deliver this present as well. It's okay. It's always next year. So the pasuk he starts. Vayachperu avdei Yitzhak banahal. Vayimsiu sham be'er mayim hayim. Vayarivu ro'e gerarim ro'e Yitzhak. Demor lanu amayim. So he starts. V'yesh ledakdek. He's so bothered. What is this be'er mayim hayim? Listen, they found water. What is this mayim hayim? You know, today they have the seltzer that they make over there, these guys. They call it Be'er Mayim Hayim. And that's the plagiarism. They're taking it from the Pasuk over there. And that's not Be'er Mayim Hayim. Trust me, that's not Be'er Mayim Hayim over there. But what's the... what's Mayim Hayim? I mean, it's a strange terminology. Living water. Water's living? Yeah, I guess if you're a biologist, you tell me there's organisms in the water, the protons, the neutrons, electrons, molecular activity. It's a science class over here. If that's the case, everything's living. The tissue box is living also. And the steak is also basar hayim. What is this be'er mayim hayim? He's bothered. He says, ki chol be'er hu be'er mayim hayim. I mean, every be'er is mayim hayim. It's, I guess water is a life-sustaining item. All of a sudden, this well is the be'er mayim hayim. He then comes along and says that in order to understand this, he found the Tikkuni HaZohar. Tikkuni HaZohar comes along and says, Vayarivu ro'e gerar im ro'e Yitzchak le'mor lanu amayim. Be'er deravu aleha. This well that they fought regarding, da oraita the Baal Peh. The argument over here was about the oral tradition. That's the Zohar HaKadosh. When the Zohar HaKadosh sees the words Mayim Hayim, those are buzzwords. Because Mayim always refers to Torah. And Hayim is clearly a Torah terminology. Kiyem Hayenu v'orich yamenu, derachea, or etz Hayim l'ma'azichim ba. So therefore, when the Zohar HaKadosh sees Mayim Hayim, they see a water that's a life-sustaining water. And to that, the Zohar HaKadosh says that that is synonymous with one of the Torot that we have, namely Torah Shebaal Peh. That means the Zohar HaKadosh believes that the synonym of Torah Shebaal Peh is Be'er Mayim Hayim. And therefore, Yitzhak Aminu was involved in something to do with the Torah Shebaal Peh, which incidentally is the Gemara, the Talmud, the Zohar, the Midrash. Torah Shebaal Peh, there's two Torot, as you know. We have the Torah Shebichtab, that's in the Ark over here. And then you have Torah Shebaal Peh, that you're going to find upstairs in the library. About 10,000 books. Torah Shebaal Peh serves as the interpretation of the Torah Shebichtab. As all of you know, the Torah Shebichtav was given as an encrypted book. It's a sealed book. It's written in Morse code. It has no interpretations. It's written in shorthand. Torah Shebaal Peh is the oral tradition that explains every pasuk what it means. I mean, lavdil, if you see a secretary taking shorthand, I mean, you just see her writing one word here, one word there, two words there. And to the amateur reader, they can't understand what's being said over here. But she knows that every word has a whole story to it. So when she writes the longhand, that one page of random words turns into 18 pages of notes. The Torah as well was written in shorthand. The interpretation of that shorthand was given to Moshe Rabbeinu as an oral tradition. It was oral. It was not written down. So when Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Torah to the Jewish people, it says, Moshe kibel Torah mesinai, umsara li Yoshua. He transmitted it. He didn't have to transmit the written law. That's a book. Here's the book. You don't have to transmit that. Read the book. What he transmitted was his tradition to what the book means. And that tradition has been handed down from father to son and rabbi to student, to the present day. That's what we do here on Thursday nights. We're continuing to try to pass down that tradition, that oral tradition. Now, a lot of it has been written down, but a lot of it has not been written down. A lot of it is just, what did your father do? What did your grandfather do? What was the... That's how the Torah works. So the Zohar HaKadosh refers to that section of Torah, Be'er Mayim Hayim. And for whatever reason, Yitzhak Avinu was involved when he was digging that well. He was establishing Torah Shebaal Peh. Later, 1,000 years later, at Sinai, we would receive the Torah Shebaal Peh. But the Ma'aseh Avot of Har Sinai is this Be'er. When he's digging the Be'er, in this Masichet Barachot, and Shabbat, and Eruvin, and the Trashi, and Tosafot, and the Rif, and the Ramba, the Rishma, everything's in this, the Zohar, the Midrash, all he's digging out, and all of a sudden, Mayim Hayim, this is Yitzhak Avinu involved in creating through this Be'er the tradition. Says the great rabbi, the Devre Shlomo, that and nobody is more suited to do this than Yitzhak Avinu. I mean, why doesn't Avraham Avinu get involved? Well, he dug wells, but he didn't hit Mayim Hayim. Yitzhak Avinu hits Mayim Hayim. How come Yaakov is the one of Torah? Yaakov is Ishtam Yoshev Alim. It's true, but there's nobody more suited to hit water than Yitzhak Avinu. Why? It's an old question everybody always asks. I'm asked this question every year. Rabbi, in your opinion, Akedat Yitzhak, who's better in the Akedah? They both passed. Avraham gets an A+. Yitzhak Avinu gets an A+. They pass with flying colors. I mean, not easy for Avraham to put a knife to his beloved son, and it's not easy for the beloved son to have himself bound on the Mizbeah, willing to give his life. They both get an A+. So they always ask me, you know, who's better? Who's better? I'll tell you what the Hatam Sofer says. Hatam Sofer says, Yitzhak, you got to give him an A++. Why? He says, because Avraham heard it from God. You know, God told Avraham, take your son and do it. So to him, he heard it. That's Torah Shebichtav. Whereas Yitzhak, he only knows about the Akedah from a tradition. He heard it from his father. His father's coming along and saying, this is the Mesorah I received from God. That's called Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, if I'm Yitzhak, you know, I say to my father, so that I have no doubt that you got the traditions, and God definitely spoke to you. But I think he meant Yishmael instead of Yitzhak. You got the wrong name. You know, it's hard to imagine. God's going to tell you to go. And then you start to question yourself, and you say, what kind of tradition is that? And the Yetzer Hara starts to work on you. You know, my father's 137 years old. You know, the mind plays games at 137. You start to forget what you ate for breakfast. You know, you start to see things that don't exist. So maybe my father's hallucinating a little. You know, take me and say, where's the Qurban? I'm the Qurban? I would have politely said, excuse me, Dad, I'm going to be right back. I have to go to the restroom and I run for my life. That's it. Yitzhak Avinu, on the other hand, it's all a tradition. You know, listen, this is the Kabbalah I have. I heard a prophecy. This is the way we understood it. This is the way I got it. I'm giving it over to you, my son. What does Yitzhak say? Amen. So Yitzhak Avinu is the perfect model. He's the paradigm. So what does it mean to accept a tradition? To accept a Mesorah? So, you earned the job. I was like, well, you passed the test. They give him the shovel, the kavod. Go dig Torah Shebaal Peh. You earned it. It's not stam. So he goes and starts to dig the Torah Shebaal Peh. And this is something that, you know, the Fum Sara Agra, he gets the reward for his loyalty to that. Nobody can give the tradition and show the loyalty to it like Yitzhak Avinu. Now he says, the Rebbe, something really amazing about Torah Shebaal Peh. I was arguing this, if you saw this week in the shul, one of the rabbis from Israel came. You know, if they would just come and collect money, but they come and argue as well. And he came and argued, of course, after he collected all the money. And, you know, he's arguing, is Torah Shebaal Peh? Is it Chesed? Is it Deen? Well, how do you look at Torah Shebaal Peh, Hacham? So I told him what I said, you know, you're wrong. I get wrong. No problem. I called up the bank, I canceled the check. But the point is, really, Torah Shebaal Peh, the Mekubalim, all right, is all chesed. Tremendous chesed comes down when you learn Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh means Gemara, the Talmud, and all that. One of the things that the Ben Ish Chai brings down about Torah Shebaal Peh, he says, there's 13 midot of Rahamim. El Rachum v'Chanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed v'Emet, Moser Chesed. These are the 13 attributes of mercy. In the Sidur, in Shacharit, before Baruch She'amar, in the pages that we skip, it says over there the name of Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Ishmael says, "B'shlosh esre midot haTorah nedreshet." That to study Torah, meaning Gemara, Talmud, you need to know 13 principles. You remember when you were young, I told you the geometric theorems? There was 13, it was, I don't know, 10 or 11 geometric theorems. If you know these theorems, you can solve any geometric problem. You know, they told you, transitive property, A equals B, B equals C, so A must equal C. That was one of them. And they disproved a few of them since we learned them. But nonetheless, every education or every field has its postulates, we call it. So Talmud has its postulates. You need to know there's 13 principles, and if you know these principles, you can extract knowledge from the Talmud. Says the Mekubalim that any time one studies the Talmud, he's basically using the 13 midot, and those 13 midot activate the 13 midot of Rahamim. So therefore, any time you're using one of the principles, which is probably every day when you learn Talmud, because every page of Gemara, you need to use the rules. So every day you're taking another tool out of the toolbox in order to take out and extract the learning. So every time you take out a tool, there's another box next to you, which is the midah of mercy that corresponds it. So it brings out tremendous rahamim. And of course we know the four ministering angels, Gabriel, Michael, Raphael, Uriel, the Kubalim say Gemara, Rashi Tevot, Gabriel, Michael, Raphael, Uriel, which is the, when a person studies the Talmud, he brings the angels down. But it goes even further. He says, when God brought the Torah down, it says he brought it down, Mimino. Mimino. His right hand. Now, right hand always represents mercy. And the Torah came down in a fire. Mimino Esh. And what does it say he brought down in this fire? Dat Lamo. That is the law to them. He brought the law down to them. Dat Lamo. Says the Mekubalim, Dat Lamo is the letters Dalet, Taf, Lamed, Mem, Vav, which is the same letters as the word Talmud. Mimino, in his right hand, which is Hesed, Esh, in a fiery way, the Talmud was brought down. So, clearly, those that study it and those that learn it, they activate tremendous amount of hasadim. The Rebbe actually quotes a pasuk. He quotes a pasuk in Tehillim 119. David HaMelech says in pasuk Pechet, that's 88, maybe he said that because it was his birthday. Anyway, he says, Kehastecha hayeni. David's telling God, Kehastecha hayeni. In your mercy, give me life. Ve'eshmera edut picha. And I will keep the ordinances of your mouth. He explains David HaMelech saying, why am I going to merit mercy? Because I'm going to keep the edut. What's your edut? Edut picha, Torah Shema'al Peh. Torah Shema'al Peh brings tremendous rahamim down to the world. Therefore he says the Zohar knows what it calls it, Mayim Hayim. In Zohar, Mayim always represents Chesed. Mayim Hayim is the water of life. Those that attach themselves to this study, they're attaching themselves to life itself. The Torah, I'll tell it to you like this. The Torah is a book that's lifeless. What gives the neshama to the Torah Shebichtav? The Torah Shebaal Peh. Just like a human being. Human being is just a physical body. You need to have a soul inside the body to give it life. The Torah on its own has no interpretation. We don't know what it means. So it's the book doesn't have a use for us. Comes to Rashi Baal Peh, and that's the soul of the book. And that gives the book life. Now we understand what it's talking about. There's no, we couldn't understand one pasuk without the gloss of Rashi Baal Peh. Hence the Zohar HaKadosh says, Mayim Hayim, da Torah Shebaal Peh. That's the case. He explains, why then on Rosh Hashanah are we making such a big deal of Akedat Yitzhak? You know, that's all we do. Take the shofar, and Akedat Yitzhak Hayom Berachamim Tiskor, Zocher HaBerit. It's very simple. Because Yitzhak Avinu during the Akedah manifested Torah Shebaal Peh. And Torah Shebaal Peh is mercy. And on Rosh Hashanah God sits on the chair of justice. And there's no better way to sweeten the midot. After all, on Rosh Hashanah we don't say the 13 attributes. But we remind God of Akedah Yitzhak, and that activates the zechut of Torah Shebaal Peh. Kehastecha hayeni. And as a result, God rises from the kisedin, it's some kisedah hamim. So, Torah Shebaal Peh is critical, not only to our daily life, but to the judgment of Rosh Hashanah. That's where we're mentioning on Rosh Hashanah. That's the case. If that's the case, we see something in Jewish history that's quite incredible. The Goyim knew this. The Goyim intuitively knew the value of Torah Shebaal Peh. Don't ask me how they knew it. Don't ask me where they learned this from. But a lot of times, Hachamim tell you, you have to learn our religion from our enemies. Because sometimes they know the value of it more than we know the value of it. You know, Haman was a big anti-Semite, but he knew the religion. He knew everything. He was able to, you know, give a good argument why you have to destroy the Jews. He was able to, you know, explain all the halachot, the Hashverosh, why we're wrong. Barizal calls the Haman, a Kabbalist lera'a. The Goyim know that without the Talmud, Klal Yisrael is doomed. And we know it. Just look at Jewish factions that left the Talmud. We have them. They're the Baitosim, they're the Karaim, they're the Tzedukim, they're the Conservative, they're the Reforms. What do they all have in common? They have two things in common. Number one, they left Torah Shema Al-Peh. They abandoned the rabbinical interpretation, or I should say they abandoned the tradition that was handed down, and they came along and said, we're going to give the Torah Shema Al-Peh our own interpretation. That's one thing they have in common. The second thing they have in common is, as a result of leaving Be'er Mayim Hayim, well, there's no more Tzedukim today, there's no more Karaim more or less today, there's no more Baitosim today. And Conservative and Reform also are a dying breed. Rabbi Wein said it in the shul the other day, when he reminded us of a story when he was in Miami Beach, and the guy across the street was the rabbi of the Reform Temple, and he says they had a relationship. And he says, you know, it's not easy being a rabbi for Jews. Jews are a difficult customer, you know. Everybody's a boss, everybody's tough. So he says to his friend, he says he had a hidden relationship with the guy across the street. So he says to the rabbi across the street, the Reform rabbi, he says, Leon, I'm jealous of you. So he says, you're jealous of me? He says, why are you jealous of me? He says, listen, I got to go every day to work, and I got a shul full of Jews. You know, not easy. He says, at least you go to your temple, they're all goyim over there. And that's the truth. You see what happens once already you left Torah Shema Al-Peh, that's it. You let the cat out of the bag. There's nothing left. It's all assimilation. Who knows who's sitting in the temples? You know, go do a pedigree on those people that are sitting in the pews. You're going to see a lot of them are not Mibnei Amenu, and they can't say Achinu Ata. They're not our brethren. But I'm not talking tonight about what we did to abandon Torah Shema Al-Peh. I started to look at some history to what the Talmud has gone through by the Goyim. You think the Jews were persecuted? The only thing that was persecuted more than the Jew was the Talmud. I go look at some of the history, and I made some copies of it here. Very quickly, in June, in the year 1242, this is in Paris, 24 wagon loads of books, totaling thousands of volumes of the Talmud, were handed to the executioner for public burning. That's the famous episode that happened, you know, on Friday, Parashat Hukat, in the year 1224, in Paris, they made a big fire. And what's the fire? The burning books. What books did they burn? They burnt the Talmud. And who was behind it? Pope Gregory. The church. They were the biggest proponent. You got to get rid of this. So you say, okay, that was a one-time event. That was an aberration in Jewish history, but it was not. Subsequently, the burning of the Talmud was repeatedly urged by the popes. In France, Louis IX ordered further confiscations in 1247 and 1248. A further burning was ordered in Toulouse in 1319 by the Inquisitor. Condemnations of the Talmud were issued by Pope Innocent VI. Alexander the Seventh, or Alexander the Fourth.
On September 9th, 1553, on Rosh Hashanah, a huge pyre was set up in the Campo di Fiori in Rome of Hebrew books that had been seized from Jewish homes. Subsequently, the Inquisition ordered all rulers, bishops, and inquisitors throughout Italy to take similar action. The orders were obeyed in the Papal States, particularly in Bologna, Ferrara, Urbina, Florence, and Venice. The events in Italy were described by the contemporary chronicler Joseph HaKohen in Emek HaBacha and by a number of other writers who managed to escape with their own books, relates that in Venice alone over 1,000 complete copies of the Talmud and 500 copies of the Code of Isaac Alfasi, the Rif. What do they want from these books? What do they want from the Rif? What bothers them, the Rif? You know, the Rif at the back of the Gemara? For this, the Goyim made a fire. You got to burn the Rif. Burning, but since when does a book become the enemy? You go to war against the library. I mean, we heard such things before. You go to war against people. And the history goes on to say, the last act of faith of the Talmud took place in Poland, in the city of Kamenets. In 1757, nearly 1,000 copies of the Talmud were thrown into a pit at Kamenets and burnt by the hangman. This is the story, Rabotai, of Klal Yisrael. Somehow the Goyim understood intuitively that this is the life of Klal Yisrael. And if you could get rid of the book, the Jew will disappear automatically. That's the Mayim Hayim. They knew it somehow. If they could just pull Klal Yisrael away from the book and get rid of it, and there were times in Europe you could not find a whole set of Shas. It was very, very rare to find a Shas. Somebody had a Shas in his house. Oh, this was considered a big thing. It was a rare commodity. Let alone to have shiurim and to study it and to learn it. You couldn't find the books. Forget about having a shiur on it. You couldn't get the copy of the book. And that was the plan of the Goyim. Take away their water, and they'll die of spiritual dehydration. To show you the impact that it made, in 1224, after they burnt the 24 wagons of books in Paris, which was a terrible tragedy, there was a great rabbi called Maharam Mirotenburg. We went to the grave of Maharam Mirotenburg. He's buried in Germany. Correct, right outside of Rashi's shul, exactly. Maharam Mirotenburg was one of the great Rishonim. Maharam Mirotenburg is the rabbi of the Rosh. Oh, you go to his kever and you shake. That's what type of... he's dead. You shake at his kever. Maharam Rotenberg learned in Paris. He was there when they burnt the books. It impacted him so much that he wrote a lamentation. Sha'ali sirufa ba'esh. It's a lamentation that is said by a lot of the Ashkenazim on Tisha B'Av. He writes a lamentation that's all talking about the burning of the Talmud, but he writes it based on another lamentation that was written by the Biyuda HaLevi in the same form that laments the destruction of the temple. That means Maharam Rotenberg saw this act as nothing less than Hurban HaBayit. And therefore he writes a kina as if the temple was destroyed. I made a copy of it just so you hear the great Hachamim, what that meant when they saw a piece of the Talmud being burnt. You have to know how they reacted. It wasn't just, okay, the book burns, okay, listen, kapara. The kina begins. Sha'ali sirufa ba'esh. He's talking to the Talmud that's burnt in the fire. He says, sirufa ba'esh, you that is burnt in the fire, sha'ali. ask l'shlom aveleich. Why don't you ask about us that we're suffering? Why don't you ask about our welfare, those that are in mourning because of you? Hamitavim shechon, that are desiring to rest. Mahatzar zevulayich, we want to be in your courtyard, in the Bet Knesset, in the Bet Midrash, but we cannot, because you don't exist anymore. We have no reason to go to the Bet Knesset or the Bet Midrash. There are no books. Hashu'afim ba'afar eres, those that have their head in the ground in mourning. V'ha'ko'avim, those that have great ache and pain. Alem moked gelilayich, on the burning of your pages. Holchim hashechim ve'en noga, we walk in darkness and there is no light. Ushlom enosh ne'enach bocheh belev nishbar, and we're broken and we're crying. And then the rabbi can't believe it. He says, Echa netuna be'esh ochla, how is it possible that the Torah was given with a fire? The Torah was given in fire. Mimino esh dat. Echa netuna be'esh ochla, how could a Torah that was given by a divine fire, te'ukal be'esh basar, and be consumed by a human fire? I mean, the rabbis, he can't believe it. He says, how could this book, which is divine, they looked at the Talmud as, this is given by God, and how could the fire consume it? V'lo nichvu zarim b'gahalayich, how didn't the enemies get burned from this? How were they able to overtake the Talmud? He can't believe it. He's saying they were able to take this book that's given by fire from God, and they were able to burn it, and nothing happened to them. So he goes on to say, "Haleba'abur zeh netanech." Is that why you gave it in such a way? Did you give it in fire in order to hint to us that that's going to be the fate of the book? Is that the reason why you gave it in fire? Were you giving us a sign, God, that this book is going to be subject to fire? Ki baharitech telahet esh b'shulayich, that at the end the book is going to be burnt. Is the reason why you chose Sinai, which was such a humble mountain, it's because the book that's going to be given on this mountain is also going to be downtrodden and humiliated? Sinai ha'al ken becha bahar Elohim, is that why you chose Sinai? Uma'as begedolim, you didn't choose the high mountains because the book is going to be humiliated. And he goes on and on. It's a tremendous kina. You can go through it. He concludes and he says, "Hegri levusak." Everybody should put on sackcloth. Alai ha'avara, because it is fire. Asher yatzta lehalek v'safta tilulayich, and has broken tile tilim of halachot that are written inside. And then he's talking to the Talmud. He says, "Kime anotech yenahamech sur." God should console you. And they looked at this as a living book. V'yashiv shevut shiftei yeshurun v'yarim et shiflayich, and God one day should lift you from your lowliness. And then he says, "Yarum levavi be'et surech le'orlak v'yagia le'hashkech v'yairu afelayich." And God willing, one day we'll come out of our darkness. So they took this as Churban Beit HaMikdash. I was once at a at a dinner for the Agudat Yisrael many years ago. I was a kid. They were honoring my grandfather, Alav Shalom. All the Gedolim were there, Moshe Feinstein, Rav Kamenetsky, all the tzaddikim were sitting at the dais. And all the dignitaries were there as well. The senator. Then the senator was Patrick Moynihan. He gave a speech. I mean, he was drunk, but he gave a speech nonetheless. Anyway, at the end of the night, I made my way up to the pulpit to kiss the Gedolim's hands. The time Rav Moshe Shera, Alav Hashalom, was the president or the head of the Agudat Yisrael. I was with my grandfather, and we were, being introduced to everybody. I was privy of an interesting conversation. Rav Moshe Shera was talking to one of the members there about the Holocaust. And he's saying, there's something about the Holocaust that people are not aware of. And he opens his wallet and he takes out a paper. I'll never forget it. And he says, this is a letter that Hitler told his henchmen to write to the governors of Poland. He's reading it now. It's written in German. It's dated, whatever the date is, 1940-something, to the governors of the Polish. Do not issue exit visas to the Talmudists of Poland to emigrate to the United States. Because if those Talmudists make it to the United States, the Jewish people will regenerate. Hitler's war is against the Talmud. What does he know about Talmudists? What does he know about all this stuff? He understood that's the lifeline, that's the Mayim Hayim. So he said, make sure these guys, and he was right, because some of those Talmudists made it to the new country, and he was right. Torah ended up flourishing from those old men, those young Bahurim that came with the Talmud under their arm. Klai Yisrael was able to live again. So look what the Pasuk tells us. Pasuk's giving us a window into Jewish history. He says, why he calls it the Nahal? Because Nahal in Kabbalah is a name of God that represents mercy. Nahal is Rashi Tevot, Noser Chesed La'alafim, the Arizal said. So when they got to the swell, they got to the Nahal, this is the mercy, this is the Yag Midot, this is the Mimino Esh Datamo. וימסיעו שם באר מים חיים, וזור הקדוש says, דה תורה שבעל פה. He hit the Torah שבעל פה, the tradition. And what does the Pasuk say? ויריבו. Torah is coming to tell us there's going to be fights on this tradition. The fights are going to be בין רועי גרר עם רועי יצחק. It's hinting to us that the fights are going to come from without, and the fights are going to come from within against the book. As we see, Vayarivu Ro'e Gerar Im Ro'e Yitzchak, as if they're together. They're going to fight together against the book, and we've seen it. And they're going to say, Lanu Hamayim. Water belongs to us, and they're going to come along. Nobody challenges the Bible. Major religions accept the Bible as a starting point. But they come along and say, Lanu Amayim, give us back the Mayim. We're not interested in your Mayim Hayim. We'll reinterpret it. We'll put a new testament to it. We'll put a new interpretation. We'll change all of it. And of course, Yitzhak Avinu says, this is a Esek, this is a problem. Any time Klal Yisrael left the study of the Talmud, it was the beginning of the end, and the Goyim knew it. That's why any time they made a fire, the first thing they threw in was the Jew, and the second thing they threw in was the book. They couldn't throw the Jew in, they threw his book, and it's the same thing. That's the Mayim Hayim. And the Torah is hinting to us, this is the Ma'aseh Avot. If you want to know where the Ma'aseh Avot of that fire in Paris, and that fire in Toulouse, and the fire in Venice, and the fire in Kamenetz, and there was fires in Spain. You wonder where all these fires were from? This is from here. Vayarivu. Vayarivu. Ro'e Gerar. It's interesting to know that Tzaddikim point out that the word Be'er is written in the Torah 48 times. And the Mishnah says that there's 48 kinyanim in order to acquire the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Mem Chet Kinyanim. That Be'er represented the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And all its acquisitions and all its abilities to connect to the tradition. Well, Yitzhak Avinu didn't stop. So he went again. What did the Jews do after these fires? They went, they went to the printing press, they printed more Talmuds, and they printed more books, and they went further. And they didn't give up. They said, what are you going to do if you have no food? You have to go find food. You have to find spiritual nourishment. They went and they printed more books. And what did they do after they printed more books? 100 years later, they burnt it again. But then the Torah is coming to hint to us something that we're witnessing in our time. Vayatek misham, he moved from there, vayahpor be'er acheret. Another well of Torah Sheba'al Peh, ve'lo ravu aleha, they didn't fight. Since we've come to America, the Talmud has had a renaissance period. The Torah has been printed. Not only has it been printed in the original Aramaic, the Torah has been printed now in so many different languages. Could you believe it? They printed it into French. Could you imagine how angry the French are? They were burning it when it was in Aramaic. Now they took the grand language and they used it to interpret the Talmud. They're turning in their graves from this. They translated it into English. They translated it, now somebody's doing it into Spanish. There's no excuse today. You could study the Talmud in any single language, and they took away the difficulty of it, meaning they elucidated it. So now you could read it. And Yitzhak Avinu said the day is going to come. Vayikra Shema Rehovot, and the day is going to come of the expansion of the Talmud. And the Torah is going to be expanded, and Torah Shema Peh is going to be accessible, and you're going to go online, and you can listen to tapes, and you can listen to videos, watch videos. The Torah Shema Peh is going to be very, very accessible. Vayomer ki ata hirchiv Adonai lanu ufarinu ba'aretz. So when you had, 5 or 6 years ago, 100,000 Talmudists come to MetLife Stadium to celebrate the Siyum Hashem, that's this. That's the Maaseh Avot Siman Debanim. That night and nights like that happens over here from Yitzhak Avinu, giving us the ability that after they burn the Talmud, keep on going. If he wouldn't have dug another well, finished, would have been over. But his persistence gives Klai Yisrael the persistence, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a breakthrough. And all of a sudden the Talmud starts to see tremendous expansion like we never saw it before. Who doesn't learn Gemara today? Every single guy has a Gemara under his arm. Everybody's studying some sort of Gemara in a class somewhere. So much so even the ladies now want to study Gemara. It's got maybe too much expansion, but nonetheless, it's expanding. Ufarinu ba'aretz. And that was a prediction. Gemara predicted it. The Navi predicted it. The Navi said, Siyon b'mishpat tepadeh, v'shaveha b'tzdaka, Zion will be redeemed, b'mishpat and justice, v'shaveha and its captives, b'tzdaka and righteousness. Rav Chaim Sonnenfeld, alav shalom, said, Siyon b'mishpat tepadeh numerically equals the words Talmud Yerushalmi. V'shaveha b'tzdaka numerically equals Talmud Babli. He says the Geula is going to come when these two Talmudim are going to start to become publicized. There's no generation. Since Matan Torah, there hasn't been a promotion of Talmud like there is in our time. I'm certain of that. They didn't have the books. Forget about learning it. They didn't have the raw material. They didn't have the hardware, let alone the rabbi to come teach them, let alone the explanations. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have everything. So we're really living in a great time. We cannot take it for granted. You know, sometimes it comes easy, so you take it for granted. Our ancestors in heaven are looking down, saying, "You don't know how lucky you are. Go take a book and open the book. We didn't have books. Our books were ashes. You have all these books, and you still don't read the books. You don't open it up and learn." God has put you in a generation, in a time of history where it's opened. That dark history is behind us. We're now living in the third well. The third well is Rechavot. Yomer ki atah hi b'shem lanu ufarinu ba'ares. What do we learn from here, Rabotai? Comes out, the story of the wells is very significant. But now I understand the connection between the Ramban and the Zohar. The Ramban said the well represents the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And the Zohar HaKadosh says the well represented the fight that they're going to have against the Talmud. And Maharam Mirotenberg said it's the same thing. In one pasuk, it's talking about the Beit HaMikdash, and it's talking about the Talmud. And in his great song, in that kina, Maharam Mirotenberg says, "What I see in this fire in Paris, I see the fire of the destruction of Yerushalayim." It's the same thing. The life of Klai Yisrael was snuffed out in Jerusalem, and it snuffed out in Paris on that night, as well as in the other places. And again, the lesson to us is what we started the shiur tonight. The Torah is not a storybook. Yeah, somebody might come and say, "The wells, ExxonMobil, what's the wells?" And then you start to see, how much sodes sodot, how much kavanot Yitzchak Avinu alav shalom invested in these wells. And the Rabban is right again when he says, "Ma'aseh avot, siman labanim." Rabotai, let's connect ourselves to the tradition. We have to hold on to the tradition. Anybody that veers from tradition puts himself under the judgments, under the dinim. We try to take us away from it, that's the biggest indication we should hold on to it with dear life. If they're trying to take it away from us, that's an indication that it must be expensive. Must be something of value. And then Be'ezat Hashem will be fulfilled on us, the pasuk that Yitzhak Abinu said, "Vayomer, ki ata hirhiv Adonai lanu, ופרינו בארץ, that's called פריה ורבייה בתורה, אמן כן יהי רצון.